welcome to the Hooked on Health podcast. I am your host, Dr. Sean Lorden. I am the author of Stop Aging in Its Tracks and the owner of Concierge Physical Therapy, a sports medicine physical therapy practice with multiple locations in Massachusetts. Please sit back and enjoy the show.
So hello and welcome to the Hooked on Health podcast. I've got our guest, Dr. Sean Kumar with us today. And Dr. Kumar, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice?
Sure. I'm an interventional pain management physician here in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm the medical director at St. Vincent Hospital here. I'm anesthesiology based, so I've done an anesthesiology residency after I did a fellowship in pain medicine, which brings me to where I am now. My practice is primarily interventional. However, we do comprehensive pain management as opposed to some of the other practices. And, you know, we right now have about two nurses in the practice. We have two medical assistants. We work together with a lot of physical therapy practices in the area, including concierge physical therapy, which we work with closely.
Yeah, that's great. And we're, you know, obviously happy to be right down the street from you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's great.
And, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording, but Sean, tell me a little bit more about the difference, because a lot of us, you know, as physical therapists, we don't get the full realm of all the different subspecialties and everything else as we go through school. And even, you know, myself being a provider on the provider side for 12 years, you know, I don't know all of the specialties. So
sure.
If you could enlighten me and our audience, that'd be wonderful.
Sure. Yeah. Like when I introduced myself, I made the distinction that I was anesthesiology based. And I think this has come up before. There's multiple ways of entering into the specialty of pain medicine. And this is done intentionally so that there are a wide variety of backgrounds so we can build upon our strengths and weaknesses on each other. And so basically, everyone who is in pain medicine has done a fellowship, or most people have done a fellowship. There are some people that are grandfathered in from, you know, many years ago before there were a lot of fellowships available, but fellowships an additional year of subspecialty training. Now, in order to enter that, you can be coming from a couple of different specialties, one of which is physiatry, which we had talked before, which is, or physical medicine and rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. Another one, which is commonly, you'll see, which is my background, is anesthesiology. And so I've done 4 years of anesthesiology prior to entering into a one-year fellowship. You'll actually see a couple of other specialties as well. Sometimes you'll see people from neurology. There are some people from interventional radiology as well.
Yeah, that's great.
And, you know, so we really bring in sort of a different base background. But in the end, we all develop the same skills through our fellowships, so they're all governed by the same governing bodies.
Excellent. And that's the interventional pain medicine.
Yeah, so pain medicine is also basically the same as interventional pain medicine, pain management.
Excellent. Yeah, because I think that's a distinction, Sean, that's important for patients to know too, because mm-hmm. a lot, and for us as providers, because a lot of times on our end, and we'll get into this, you know, how interventional pain and pain management works, you know, directly with PT. You know, the differences between saying, hey, you know, go see a physiatrist or go see your orthopedic surgeon, or, you know, and what every subspecialty kind of does, right? And what they're responsible for. Because each, sure. You know, from what I've learned over the years, is like everybody's got kind of a different entree of what they can offer, you know?
Exactly.
So I'd love to talk about that. So, you know, I do want to just touch on your background and sort of, you know, I guess what made you, Sean, decide to get into interventional pain?
Sure. So I was introduced to interventional pain during my residency in anesthesiology. I did my residency in anesthesiology at Louisiana State University in Shreveport. And during anesthesiology, you have different rotations you can go through, which are usually subspecialties of the field. And, you know, I had a couple of different interests at that time, including cardiac anesthesia, regional anesthesia, which is blocks and things like that. And when I was introduced to pain, I felt like it melded a lot of these different sort of technical interests that I had, because it's a very procedural subspecialty, along with more of the traditional patient-doctor relationship. And that's something I missed during my anesthesiology residency, because it was very intense but short-lived relationship with the patient. You know, you guide them through the surgical experience, and you know, you take care of them during surgery, but you oftentimes will lose touch with them. And so I definitely missed having a longer term relationship with patients. And that's something that, you know, was really nice to be exposed to again during during my exposure during those rotations, as well as, you know, I felt that you had the opportunity to make a very, you know, large quality of life change for patients with pain management. There's a lot of things that we take for granted, you know, the ability to walk or stand up or leave our house, that you don't really, you know, realize how important these things are until you lose that. And I saw that during the rotation. And I think that, you know, it melded my sort of professional, technical, you know, scientific interests with the more human side of medicine really was a nice combination for me. And that's why I chose to pursue that.
Yeah, that's excellent. You know, I think it's being, as physical therapists, we're so fortunate to be able to spend 45 to 60 mm-hmm. minutes with our patients. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I love being a PT, is because you can actually develop a relationship with our patients. And, you know, and that's where, you know, and why it's so important for us as providers, you know, on the PT, then, you know, the not really, we call it the conservative side, to get to know you guys, you know, and get to know what, you know, what other options people have if we're hitting a wall, you know, to help them. So that's kind of where I'd love to go next. You know, how do our practices, how do you see our two fields working together? And I guess maybe like give an example of a patient who like would be the perfect patient for both of our fields to kind of work on together.
So, I mean, as you know, we work together a lot with patients. I think this is really, we're a team when it comes to treating a lot of patients. Primarily difficult to treat patients. And, you know, I think a lot of times patients will start out in physical therapy. You know, over the past decade or so, medicine has become a lot more conservative with intervention. I think in the past, everyone went towards surgery before doing anything else. Mm-hmm. If we saw pathology, say, on imaging, and there weren't a whole lot of other avenues tried. And a lot of times now we'll start, you know, by starting with PT, because even just some basic things such as strengthening, range of motion increases can restore quite a bit of functionality. And when that doesn't work, or if I have a patient where, you know, I'm doing injections and things aren't working, I think we can work together and oftentimes sort of fill in each other on what's going on. So I find, you know, a lot of patients that we've worked with, I've done a procedure or two. We're not getting where we need to go. And, you know, I work with the physical therapists and, you know, because they're spending so much more time with the patient hands-on, you know, every day or three times a week for an hour, they have some other insights. And so we can touch base sometimes and say, hey, you know, I think we've treated this patient's ridiculous pain, but it seems like maybe there's some SI joint dysfunction here as well. And it seems like every time we do these certain things, this happens. And yeah, that'd be some more insight. You know, obviously I have a 5-10 minute physical exam, but I can't spend, you know, 3 days a week with the patient for an hour. So that gives me a lot of insight, as well as just looking at their progress through physical therapy. From my perspective, you know, if it comes to me first, oftentimes they're deconditioned, they've lost function. And the goal of my practice is to really restore and maintain function. And again, this is something, you know, that I don't have the ability or expertise to do. I mean, I can take a patient out of pain, but, you know, just giving them some exercises or strengthening exercises, a range of motion exercises, isn't likely to be a whole lot of benefit. I think that's where sending a patient to physical therapy, we really see the true improvement then. I mean, I can facilitate a patient being able to do physical therapy by improving their pain or decreasing their pain significantly, but the physical therapy is what really brings the function back.
Yeah, I think that's a great distinction. You know, I think, you know, for patients, you know, there's often more layers, Sean, to any diagnosis, but specifically, let's maybe talk about low back pain, right? There's mm-hmm. so many layers to that, because there's, you know, psychosocial, there's, you know, depression, there's so many different layers that, you know, in a 40-minute appointment or a 10-minute exam with you, you know, that as we work together and we can kind of get to, like, you know, I call it, you know, really it's like an onion, right? Trying to get to the bottom of the problem and,
yes,
figure out when in the timeline people need different interventions. And I think that's something that, you know, to have a team who really can kind of put the patient in the middle, and then we work around the patient and you know, to their needs, you know, that's kind of a special thing. And you don't find that, I mean, really in healthcare at all today. It's really, it's hard to find that because everybody's so busy. I don't know
how it's hard. I mean, I think we're seeing a pushback towards that direction because it's very, you know, it's an imperfect science. You know, what we were seeing in the past, look, we look at an MRI, we have a general symptom. So we're kind of treating based upon these scientific objective measures. But a lot of times, you know, if you do an MRI on 150-year-olds, there's going to be many things wrong on the MRI. You can't treat that. So that's where I think the difficulties arise. And it just takes time sometimes because there's so much overlap between these different pathologies sometimes that, it, you know, you may take some component of the pain out, but they still have different components, or the pain shifts or changes after you start to improve one area. And so that's really where this teamwork comes into play.
Yeah. And so for our audience, you know, and Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, but what Sean is saying is that just because something shows up on an MRI, like a herniated disc, doesn't mean that that's the source of your pain. So it could exactly. be coming from different areas, could be coming SI joint, it could be in your brain, could be coming, you know, from different, you know, it could be coming from any, you know, that's where it takes further investigation and, you know, and really just to get to know people into, you know, and to get, have relationships with different providers, you know, chiropractors. I just had Dr. Mm-hmm. Brandt Smolarek on, and I don't know if you've met him yet, Sean, but he's wonderful.
We've spoken a few times. Yeah. He's actually come to the office before.
Yeah. He does a great job. And we've had really good results with, you know, working with him and, you know, a couple other chiropractors in the area. And it's just, you know, it's, and I would love to hear from you, Sean, like who else do you add to your team? You know, so when you're dealing with a really difficult, you know, chronic pain patient, and maybe describe what you like an everyday, maybe not an everyday, but a patient that you can really help. Talk about that person and who is on their care team.
So we'll see a lot of patients post, say, well, we'll use a lumbar spine surgery patient, a post-laminectomy pain patient. Patient that's had multiple surgeries in the past that has had many issues, say they had spinal stenosis, lumbar radiculopathy, they've had a few spine surgeries and they're no longer a surgical candidate anymore. However, they're still left with a good amount of you know, functional limitation. They have a lot of pain. They may have gone down the medication pathway in the past and that's starting, you know, to not work. And they're starting to be more and more functionally limited. So for me, you know, the ideal patient is someone that really wants to remain functional. You know, I do look at things like pain scores and functional, you know, functional scores. But really, I want to, you know, see day-to-day function. Like I'll use a metric as simple as, can you walk to the mailbox? Can you walk up and down steps? And so that to me is an ideal patient. But oftentimes, you know, with having had, you know, 3-4 surgeries, they've been on medications, they have multiple pathologies now that are, you know, related to their pain and their, you know, lack of function. And so oftentimes there's a neurosurgeon, you know, that is referring the patient. There's a neurologist involved. There's a primary care physician involved. Sometimes there's a psychologist or pain psychiatrist involved. And of course, physical therapy, chiropractor. So, you know, there are so many, you know, hands in the game at this point that it's difficult to coordinate. And even just gathering the information on this is sometimes difficult. You know, when you get into a new patient visit, you know, we try to obtain as much information as we can before, but it takes time to get all these pieces of the puzzle together until we can figure out what the problem is. And I'll oftentimes tell patients, you know, there is not just one thing wrong here. So we're going to probably go down this path where we're going to try many things. And even when things don't work, they help me. They help me take things off the table as to what could be causing the pain. And, you know, I'll give you an example. We may try doing diagnostic injections or diagnostic blocks to try to figure out where the pain is coming from. And we may get one component of the pain, you know, by doing that. And there's still another 2 or 3, you know, places the pain is coming from that we need to figure out. And so we need to sort of elucidate each of these pathologies. And oftentimes this really takes a team.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, it's so powerful, you know, and it's powerful, Sean, for patients to hear that we don't always know where it's coming from, right? So we can do our physical examination and, you know, get it down to, you know, let's use a low back pain patient, a level, you know, 1 or 2 levels, you know, in, but we don't know exactly where it's coming from until you do exactly what you're talking about, which is, you know, to figure out, you know, with intervention, as best you can, you know, what actually relieves the pain and at what levels. And it may not probably be the levels that could be positive on MRI. It could be something else.
Sure. You know, one example I always use, because a lot of times patients will ask me, well, you have the MRI. Can't you just tell me what's wrong? Can't we just fix this?
Yeah, don't you love that?
You know, I'll give them the example. And the best example of this is, I'll tell you when this does work. And this is when you get the 19-year-old football player that, you know, took a hit. I do an MRI. They have a one-level disc herniation pressing on the right L5 nerve root. And they've got, you know, pain in the dermatomal distribution on that side. So that's a home run. That's easy, right? But the problem is, you know, as we all age, the imaging is obviously very helpful and at the root of this, but there's not just one thing wrong. So we have to figure out, of these things that are showing up with various testing, whether it's an MRI or an X-ray or, you know, EMG or whatever diagnostic study we're doing, you know, we have to know how to use that information. And there's, you know, ultimately the clinical history for the patient and physical exam, which really come into play as well to try to differentiate what's wrong.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, on our side, on the physical side, you know, we put people through repeated motions and, you know, we tend to be pretty good with our hands and, you know, figuring out where the dysfunctional levels are, but, you know, we're limited by the fact that we don't have imagery, right? And half the time patients will come to us and say, oh, well, I had an MRI last year, you know, but then they don't have access to it, or we don't have access. Right. To it. So, you know, to your point about, you know, trying to coordinate care with between the PCP, you know, psychology, you know, all these different, you know, neurology, all these different specialties, it can get really difficult and it can be tough to be, you know, you almost turn into a PCP at that point of that person's, you know, of that person's pain case.
Yeah, you're quarterbacking. You've got to just figure out where everything is. And, you know, that's where I think the communication aspect of this is great. You know, we, despite all of this high tech, you know, EMR systems and all these ways of communicating, sometimes just picking up the phone, which I've had this experience with a lot of your physical therapists that they get a hold of me and just say, hey, look, I've been trying to do this, this, and this. I don't know what the problem is. Do you have an idea what's going on? And just that 5-minute conversation can save hours of back and forth, basically.
Yeah. And I think, as PTs, you know, I feel like sometimes we're afraid to pick up the phone and to call, you know, a specialist or call a doctor. And, you know, we're fortunate to have you and, you know, and some other, you know, friends who can pick up the phone and help walk through what's best for the patient. Because oftentimes, you know, like cortisone injections, you know, surgery, spinal implants, like these aren't our specialties. Those are your specialties.
Sure. So, and the same thing with physical therapy, you know, it helps me to know what you guys are doing and what you're finding in your exams.
Yeah. And who we can improve and who we're hitting a wall with, you know, and I try to educate, you know, my younger staff and, you know, newer grads in general, you know, as you get better and you start to see more plans of care and more patients, you start to know who you can, who's hitting a wall, you know, who just takes a little while. Right. And, you know, you need to, it takes a team, you know, and if it's been, you know, 2 months or 8 to 10 weeks and people, I always say, if they're not getting better or worse, right. And it's been 3 or 4 weeks and you're really working them hard 2 or 3 times a week, you know, it's time to pick up the phone and do something different to change that plan of care, you know, and oftentimes, Sean, it is pain. That's a limiting factor, you know, and it's not just function, you know, of course. As PTs, we're taught to just get rid of the pain first and then restore the function. Well, it doesn't always work. It doesn't always work that way, you know? And so I'd love to hear a little bit more. And I'm sure, our audience wants to know specifically, you know, we know about cortisone shots. I think most people are like, do I need a cortisone shot? Right. Well, let me call Sean, right? Or, you know, and I guess, you know, another benefit to me, and I would love to know, like, when do I call you versus an orthopedic surgeon, right? So I know Phil Leahy up the street can do a cortisone shot too, but, you know, I also, you know, what are the differences for our audience? And I guess what, like, tell us more about your scope and kind of what you do.
Sure. I mean, I'm primarily interventional, although I do, you know, really comprehensive therapy, including medications and other modalities that can help the patient. I'm pretty broad. I mean, I do focus a lot on the spine. However, we do joints as well. Peripheral nerve issues such as, you know, diabetic peripheral neuropathy, complex regional pain syndrome. So we don't really restrict ourselves to any one area of the body. So any sort of syndrome or pathology that can result in pain is likely something that we can treat. Now, you know, I think there's different times you send to different, you know, different physicians. So obviously, you know, if there's a correctable, say, you know, joint issue, you know, an orthopedic doctor would probably be the best place to do that, or versus, you know, some sort of red flag. Say you get a patient, they're saying, hey, you know, I'm getting more and more severe weakness in my leg. I can't really feel my leg anymore. So obviously that's a surgical issue, and I would go to a neurosurgeon first. Now, you know, if their symptoms are in the middle somewhere, and then oftentimes that's something I can evaluate and decide whether, well, you know, I think this patient can, we'll try doing some injections, we'll try doing some physical therapy and other modalities. And if they don't get improvement, then we have surgery as an option down the road. So there's no clear-cut answer to that. I think, you know, we bounce patients, you know, back from orthopedics, from neurosurge, and, you know, we all share the same patients. It just depends, I think, on the severity of the disease sometimes when they present, especially if they come to you. But I'm sure you've seen patients with, you know, say severe spinal stenosis. You're like, I'm having gait imbalance issues, and, you know, I've all this pain in my arm. And, you know, so obviously that's a patient that needs to get to a surgeon quickly. So we don't want to send them to too many other physicians before that happens, just a delay in care. But I think, you know, in the absence of red flags, there are many different pathways patients take. So it's not a really clear cut answer, but it's sort of the way that, you know, how care is done nowadays. So.
Yeah. I mean, so, and, you know, and we both know that, you know, insurance companies can sometimes drive,
sure,
drive that. But, you know, and that's what's nice about us being able to work together, and, you know, we can streamline care in cases where it's really absolutely necessary. And that's pretty powerful. But I was just going to mention, you know, I think it's really important to, you know, patient, you know, a low back patient with stenosis, like you were just talking about, is, you know, 55 plus, you know, low back is just one of the most difficult diagnoses served up at physical therapy, chiropractic, I think probably anywhere. And tell me, you know, we talked about cortisone shots, PRP, like what are some other options that folks have?
Sure. So, you know, if we look at low back pain, there's so many different pain generators, right? We have the facet joints, we have the disc, we have the vertebral body itself. We've got the you know, the spinal nerves, and that are all which can cause pain. And so it really depends on the pathology, you know, how, and that's based on obviously the imaging, how the patient presents, what their clinical history is. But there are, you know, there's a lot of different ways of treating this. And so I think everyone's heard of the cortisone shots, which are, you know, different types of steroid that are injected. And this, the most important thing here is where it's injected, because the injection, this refers to any sort of cortisone injection. I mean, you get cortisone injections in the joint, you get cortisone injections in your facet joint.
Yeah.
You can have selective nerve root blocks, epidural injections. So really, I think the term, it's just such a general term that doesn't always, you know, tell you a whole lot. So, you know, it depends. And so for low back pain, you know, for instance, you have the facets. For facets, we just
froze there for a second. Sean, are you there with me? Hang on. Huh. I don't know what happened there, but can you hear me now?
There's a whole host of interventions that can be done. And the term cortisone injection is sort of just a broad term for any sort of injection with steroid.
Yeah, that's great. No, I appreciate that. We cut out a little bit there, but I think we get the broad, yeah, strokes of that.
Pick back up.
No, that's great. So, you know, I think, you know, in general, some of the most common questions that I get, Sean, are, does it hurt? Right. So what do you say to that for patients?
You don't want to completely lie. I mean, it really is dependent on the patient. I mean, I have some patients that, you know, are writhing before we touch them, you know, just out of anxiety. And then I have some patients say they don't even feel it. I would say in general, it depends on what the procedure is, but we take our time and we use some local anesthetic, which, you know, most of us have had at some point or the other. Everyone's had stitches or a tooth pulled or, you know, cavity filled, where you get local anesthetic injection. That typically is the worst part of the procedure.
Okay.
You know, that's at the skin and that's the most sensitive point. But overall, the procedures are pretty tolerable. They're generally pretty fast. You know, most of the procedures are 5-10 minutes or less. Even, I mean, some epidurals are literally a minute long. So they're all very tolerable procedures. Majority of procedures are done without any sort of sedation, and patients tolerate them fine. It's, I think, knowing what to expect this part is. And so once we walk through this, we always walk the patient through the procedure, and most people tolerate it fine afterwards. And you know, I would say at least, you know, 70-80% of the time people are like, oh, I was expecting a lot worse. And so that's always a good sign. So
especially when they're coming in with pain to begin with, right? So
right. Right. And I think that's a big thing. So when they leave and they're feeling better, then they're always saying it's worth it. So
yeah, that's sometimes what I say when we do the dry needling. People always say, you know, hurt is a needle. And I say, well, you know, you're in pain now, aren't you? Like, let me just give me a chance, you know, let me get you out of pain. But no, that's great. So I guess, you know, another thing that I had written down that I wanted to ask you about was, what excites you the most about sort of the future of your field? Where do you see it going?
You know, I think I alluded to this before, but there's been a real shift in medicine towards minimally invasive approaches. Like 10 years ago, you know, there was a lot more surgery being done, a lot more open surgery. And as, you know, time went on, we just found out that wasn't the best thing for the patient. The recovery times were longer, and you know, you weren't really functionally or even in terms of pain all that much better many times. And so we've seen a big shift. And what's exciting in pain is that there's been so much innovation, both in terms of refinement of existing techniques, as well as the emergence of new techniques. So, you know, over the past, you know, 6-7 years, I've just seen every year there's new technologies coming out, whether it's you know, refinement of spinal cord stimulation to the emergence of new technologies, even these spacers and things like that, these intraspinous process spacers that have come out over the last few years to help treat, you know, mild to moderate spinal canal stenosis. This is something that we wouldn't have imagined 10 years ago. And so, you know, every year new technologies are coming out, and you know, we kind of wait a little bit. You know, sometimes we jump on it if it has good clinical evidence, and sometimes we just want to wait a while and see how it all. I think that, you know, we're seeing a lot of advancements within the field.
Yeah, it's great. I wish. Have you seen anything with like spinal compression or vertebral compression fractures? Is there any advancement in that, or are they still doing like just the cement?
So we're doing, you know, kyphoplasties for those. So, you know, the advancement has been, well, you know, there's whether there's a balloon done to restore some height, but that's been the standard of care for those right now. And that's generally done for treating the pain component of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we see a fair amount of older adults, you know, with osteoporosis who end up, you know, developing, you know, the compression fractures. And, you know, the kyphoplasty seems to be the go-to. I would love to see that, you know, innovated somehow, because it's, you know, it's tough to really get patients fully functional after something, you know, after that. But, you know, depending on what they're doing, you know, if they're a little younger or what, because it can inhibit function. But yeah, that was just something that came to my mind when we were talking about innovation. Now you do, do you do the spinal implants, the stimulators? Were we talking about that?
I do spinal cord stimulation. And so spinal cord stimulation is, you know, a really simplistic way of looking at it, is where you're putting leads which transmit electronic impulses to the dorsal columns of the spinal cord, which are what transmit pain. And that basically changes the way that the pain is perceived by the brain. And so it's a way that can treat, any kind of neuropathic or nerve pain, in you know, it's treating radicular pain, patients that have, for instance, had surgery in the past, still have persistent pain. It typically affects the nice thing about something like spinal cord stimulation is it's not just a two-step process. And so it's one of the few things in medicine where you get a test drive. And so before you do it, you have percutaneously or through the skin, just like an injection, you implant the lead and you simply tape it on for a few days and send the patient home and see, does this help? And yeah. So that's one of my, the best parts about the procedure, and that the patients that typically get the implant are all going to do well because they've had a test run of the procedure. And it's one of the few things you don't get a test run with surgery or anything else. And so it's nice. And I think for the right patients, it's a very effective therapy. And this is one place we've seen huge refinements. I mean, I remember seeing one of these, about 12 years ago, and compared to now, I mean, it's night and day in terms of how the stimulation is done, the different sort of algorithms, the types of stimulation, and even the types of pain conditions that the stimulation can treat.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So who is the perfect, if there is a perfect patient for a spinal cord, is there an age bracket that you kind of look at, minimal past medical history? What are you looking at?
You know, the perfect patient is probably anyone with neuropathic pain that's resistant to other therapies. It's obviously not something that you look at as your first line therapy, that it is still a surgical implant. And it's something that you have to live with. I mean, and there are sort of burdens associated with that in terms of charging it and, maintaining the device. And the battery does need changed every once in a while. But your patient is probably someone that's had a spine surgery in the past, that's had either a laminectomy or a fusion. They're no longer really the best surgical candidate, where surgery hasn't given them the relief, or issues they've had in terms of function, in terms of weakness, in terms of whether they had severe spinal stenosis, or that they still have radicular pain. And so this will help treat some of the radicular pain. So those are patients where this works really well for. As like I said, the technology's advanced, the indications have increased, and so it does a decent job at treating low back pain now. Even some axial low back pain can respond, although that's not the number one real indication for this. That component of the pain that's associated with post laminectomy pain can oftentimes also respond to it. So it's done for many things. It's also done for things like, for instance, diabetic peripheral neuropathy responds very well. That's otherwise very difficult to treat condition. Things like complex regional pain syndrome can respond to that as well.
Yeah, that's a big. So I've got a lot of patients who I might be sending your way after this call with peripheral neuropathy. And some of it's idiopathic, right? Sometimes it's the person I'm thinking of has idiopathic peripheral neuropathy. And it's just, it's characterized for our audience by she's just got pain in her feet at all times. Mm-hmm. And, it causes difficulty with balance because there's sensory issues as well. And, it wakes her up at night, And so if this is an option and it's bad enough, Sean, I mean, she's older, right? So what we think about as PTs is preventing falls. And if there's a balance component,
sure.
If there's a balance component, and it's being caused, by peripheral neuropathy that's not, coming from the low back, and there's something you can do. She was literally told, she was told that there's nothing anybody can do. So I think, maybe she's coming to see you this week.
Yeah, no, I mean, after they've gone through the first and second line treatment, that's usually what happens. It's like, well, you're gonna have to live with this. And so, it doesn't help everyone, but like I said, the nice thing about it is you can try it.
So I think, it's great for our patients to know, Sean, that, if they have peripheral neuropathy and it's not coming from their back and it's truly idiopathic, or it's, there's it's diabetic in nature, that there are options, and it's not just, they're left with the pain or they have to take Neurontin for the rest of their lives. So
sure. I've had some patients with really, really good results from spinal cord stimulation. So you can always try it.
Yeah, no, so that's really, you know, that's great. So, you know, I think that, you know, I think that's, you know, it's great for, you know, it's great for people to know that there is hope, you know, and it's not just the end of the road and they have to cope for the rest of their lives, you know. So that's wonderful. So, any last remarks, anything you want to leave our audience with about, you know, about your specialty and how you help your patients?
I think really, you know, a lot of what we've talked about here is it's, I think there's multiple people involved in this part of this journey. And the patient really is at the center. And so if the patient's willing to put some of the work in to do some physical therapy, to work with us, to have the patients to get through some of these diagnostic procedures, we can usually make improvements. We can usually get to a reasonable functional level. And I think you asked a little bit earlier about how do we sort of, you know, personalize each patient's care. And a lot of that's based upon what the goals of the patient are. You know, and obviously they have to be realistic, you know, looking at the patient's pathology. I mean, we can't, you can, you're not going to go, you know, to run a marathon if you've had six back surgeries and you can't really walk. But we can come up with some realistic goals. And oftentimes these goals are achievable. It may take some time and some dedication, but you can get there usually. And so, and I think with the right team, in the communication with the patient, you know, amongst the entire team and some dedication, you can get there.
Yeah, so for those of you out there who, you know, are suffering with chronic low back pain, there are options, you know, and if it's not working at PT or at the chiropractor or with your current, you know, your current docs, you know, I think it's always important, you know, to have a conversation with someone else, you know, and I think that you shouldn't be afraid to, you know, to reach out. And I tell my patients all the time, Sean, you know, if you don't, you know, if you don't like my opinion, go ask Mariah, you know, or you don't like my opinion, go, you know, go down the hall, you know, I don't care, like go see another physical therapist, you know, like I, you know, I think that it's important that, you know, people are educated and, you know, what they're looking for. And, you know, there's a certain level of trust that, you know, as PTs, we get with our patients because we spend so much time with them. So they intrinsically trust our referrals, just like, you know, your patients trust you. So, you know, I think that's a really powerful thing. And, you know, I think putting, you know, to your point of, you know, and the last question was really how do you individualize and tailor care? And, you know, it's a team effort, you know, because if you're thinking something, you know, we could look at the same patient and you're what's so valuable is that you see them through a different lens than I do, you know, and I think that that's there's so much power in that. There's so much power in that. So yeah, I just want to say thanks, Sean, for coming on, you know, tonight.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for speaking to me about physical therapy too. So, you know, I think we'll keep communicating and do the best for the patients.
Yeah, and our patients, you know, couldn't be happier. You know, the outcomes that they get when we're both, you know, and I shouldn't say we, but you know, all the providers, you know, on my team and the concierge team,
Yes.
and you know, working together and just, you know, the audience should know that Dr. Kumar is very busy and he picks up the phone himself and will talk to our any of my providers for, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes, 20, whatever it takes to get people better and to get to the bottom line. And that's not something, Sean, that you find often in 2022. And, you know, you should know that that's a special thing. And, you know, I appreciate that. And, you know, our patients appreciate that too. So, you know, going above and beyond isn't, you know, isn't necessarily the, you know, it's not something that everybody does anymore. And, you know, everybody, you know, our patients appreciate it and I appreciate it. And, you know, thanks for coming on tonight and sharing the good word about interventional pain and how we help each other.
Sure. Thanks for having me. All right.
Awesome.
We'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Awesome, Sean. Have a wonderful night and happy holidays.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks again for joining us for this week's Hooked on Health podcast. Please check out our website and the link below. Whether you're listening on Spotify or on our page, you can reach me personally by email for more information.